Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Okay, folks, welcome back. It's Now or Never, and we have a very special guest that we're going to interview today. Okay, folks, we have Chip Murray with us, and as a matter of fact, I've tried to prime the guns and the artillery for everybody to prepare that we're going to have you on today, Chip, and so thank you for making the time. And as a matter of fact, actually, before we get into this, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you, PR.
No problem. As a matter of fact, what I want to do, and I've kind of mentioned this, and I didn't want to, make you feel like you're being set up or anything, but one of the things I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create a network of businesses to actually start standing behind people who support the Constitution. You being one of those, as a matter of fact, let me kind of introduce who you are. You're a pastor in Orange County, New York, that has actually been a patriot for so long that you've actually gotten organized, and you organized Orange County Strong. How long ago?
2015.
So you've been at it for basically 10 years coming up sometime soon. You got an anniversary coming up.
Time flies, yes, sir.
And
by the way,
go ahead.
Correct you. I'm an elder at Howell's Church, not a pastor.
Oh, okay. Fine. I apologize.
That's okay.
But you do work with a lot of black robes and in the black robe regiment and so forth. So,
yes, sir.
Awesome. So this coming 10 years, you've actually been able to grow this group and you've had some successes and influences. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I don't want people to just think that here's a musician that's written a bunch of really great songs. What I want to do is I want to basically help everybody understand, here's a patriot who's in the fray trying to help lead, and actually, so that everybody knows, I work with you and your group in trying to help you guys get organized in taking on your government locally from your county up. And so some of the successes you've had, I know you kind of helped some people get elected. So go ahead. Who are those people that benefited from knowing Orange County Strong?
Yeah, so I was kind of a sleeper cell patriot until 2008 when, in other words, I didn't even know my identity as a conservative patriot until 2008 when Obama came into power. And then I think I attended my first, they actually called it a Tea Party rally in D.C., I think 2009. And I had just kind of come out of the closet as a singer-songwriter 7 or 8 years before that. So that was kind of my primary focus. And just started to get kind of legs, getting civically involved, joined a local chapter of a group called Oath Keepers in 2012 that was back in the day when, it was kind of socially a good thing, an accepted thing to be a patriot. The chapter was misled, and by 2015, they were going to close it, and I had asked the state president if I could take it over, and so he said, yeah, if you can find some, because I'm not a veteran. I never served, unlike you, GR, and thank you for your service, by the way, but I never served in uniform, whether law enforcement or military, so I was able to find a retired a Middletown police detective who would co-lead with me. So we took it over. And when groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center started to marginalize Oath Keepers, we formed a DBA, Orange Strong, and that's how we became Orange Strong. And then we just, our networks, we reached out to the Police Chiefs Association in Orange County. We reached out to the Mayors and Supervisors Association. So we were able to get in front of large groups and present what it was that we were offering our resources, because we were mostly people like yourself, people with military backgrounds, that had expertise in medical, emergency, security, communications, that type of thing. And we were basically offering our services to be backup to the local authorities and government agencies.
Okay, so that is awesome. I too, actually, when I started getting active, because for 30 some years, I was in a position in the intelligence community where you couldn't really be politically active. I mean, if you were politically active in any way, because the control of our intelligence services is unfortunately political. And as the Democrats come in, I mean, we could literally see how all of a sudden these policies that were from the Democrats, because when I actually joined, I joined under Reagan and the intelligence community. When I got into the intelligence community, it was under Reagan, the very beginning of Reagan's administration. So that when we finally saw a change, this is when I realized you really have to be sterile with Clinton. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, even with Bush, I started realizing that with Bush's administration, things were changing. And so, I had already been tipped off by many people, do not talk about your politics and your views.
Yep.
And me, being the kind of person I am, that's exactly what I did. And as a matter of fact, I poked people in the eye. And I remember, I wasn't a very liked person in the intel community because I actually told people what I thought. And I was told several times that the only reason I didn't get, elevated into this seat, a seat of responsibility like at headquarters of the Marine Corps. The only reason I didn't go there is because nobody wanted me to be there because I'd be telling officers what they should be doing and what, these agencies should be doing and so forth. And nobody likes to be told what to do. Believe that. Yep. I it's hard for me to understand that. But anyway, my real problem was that I had to maintain the sterility and I just didn't get a chance to, get that filtering in my brain. But bottom line, I realized with the Clinton administration, I really needed to stifle myself, especially after Ruby Ridge. When I started seeing those types of things, you can't actually speak bad about, those agencies and so forth. So when I finally started coming out of the closet, per se, regarding politics, that's when I actually started going to some of these organizations. And I went to the Oath Keepers before I, fully retired from the IC, the intelligence community. So, I was able to sit there and so forth. And I was trying to meet people. And this is when I realized I needed to write a book. And that's what was the impetus of my first book. Because there was just not enough talking about what we have to do. There were people and there were protests and the Tea Party, all that type of stuff was happening. But nobody really articulated a plan of how to do this. And the convention of states had existed, but they were, I don't want to say they were wrong, but they were, and was trying to help people. And this is how naive I was. Yeah. When I came into this, I actually thought all the patriots were, were united. They just kind of had these affinities towards these different groups. I didn't realize how divided they were. So anyway, so you created this Orange County Strong. You've been very active and you've actually benefited many people. I think the sheriff was one, right?
Well, we certainly developed a good relationship and was one of the first in the county that we developed. But a lot of local community leaders.
Okay.
Got to know who we were, and if they had something going on, they realized they could come to one of our meetings and get in front of a good group of people. I don't say model citizens, but people that cared about, had sort of a same values.
Okay. Well, so as I look at your music that you've done, you've been doing music for a long time. Obviously, you've been playing guitar and involved in music since you were a kid. Can I make that leap?
so, sort of a closet musician until somebody had kind of whispered in my ear around 1999, it might have been. And I started to come out. I started just actually that moment crystallized something, and I start, all of a sudden a fountain of music started flowing out of me. I started writing all kinds of original stuff, and that was starting around 2000. And then as I started to realize who I was in terms of Patriot and all that, I got involved in a political campaign for Nan Hayworth, who. We were successful in her campaign to unseat Representative John Hall. You might remember GR, the group Orleans. She's still the one. You're still the one. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So John Hall was the lead of that group, and he became a congressman, a very liberal Democrat congressman.
Okay.
So I wrote a song called The Ballad of John Hall, and that became like the theme song for the Nan Hayworth campaign.
Okay, and the Ballad of John Hall was on which album?
Wide Awake.
Wide Awake. Okay, that's right. I've got that. And so that was your first album then. Wide Awake was your very first.
Actually, Gone Wishing was the first album that was released in 2004.
Okay.
And then Wide Awake was released in 2010.
Okay, and do you have a third?
Oh yeah, that was that was the COVID. That was when the world turns around.
Okay,
that was recorded right in the middle of when they locked us down.
All right. So out of all of these, and what I was going to allude to was I was talking to Timber Nation. I don't know if you've listened to my show, but I kind of endorse people. Like Chip Murray and his music. And so people, if you need to listen and you want to have music that's, good for the family, you don't have to, wait till the kids go to bed. And actually the message and, metaphorically, these are great songs and they're really well done. I mean, this is professional stuff. I mean, you've done it. I think that you've done a great job here. Now, so I endorse a lot of different companies. There was Radio Dust Covers. There used to be Fortitude Financial Consulting. I think Gary Smith is retired. But there are a few companies that I knew were ran by patriots. And I want to bring, and I want to have a laundry list, a very comprehensive list of companies around the United States that offer, services, but they're patriots. And not only... do we endorse them? Because I don't ask a stipend. I don't ask, anything from Timber Nation or anybody. What I ask is that they commit to supporting the Constitution like me. In other words, and what I'm asking Timber Nation, and actually Timber Nation unhesitantly said, yeah, we'll actually do that. I'm not asking them to give us all their profits, but what I'm asking is that you can't do campaigns without money. You can't. But we don't have to spend a lot of money to be effective. But if we support and help that message get out to these people, we'll support the Constitution and they'll sign our pledge. As long as they sign that pledge, and you've read that pledge. And as a matter of fact, you've gone out and had people sign that pledge and you've asked people to sign it. How many people have you had sign it?
Three, I believe.
Three. And there's been... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
In the last election cycle, there were three. We're in a blue state, right? So you say the word Constitution to some of these guys and they run the other way, right?
Right.
But we found three candidates that were willing to sign. And
okay, so some actually were apprehensive probably as well, right?
GR, you know better than anybody that how constitutionally illiterate we are. We've become and dumbed down. And this past year working with you has been the most, enlightening in terms of realizing what a wonderful tool God gave us that I had no real understanding of compared to where I am now.
Right. So getting companies and so forth to actually contribute some money towards those people who actually have signed these pledges, because what they're basically doing, folks, is we're asking our public servants to lead on holding them accountable. That's what we want. We want somebody, if we're going to vote for them, they got to tell us that you can hold me accountable for 100% of what I do. And if I violate my oath and I fail to support that Constitution, I will step down. Without hesitation, yeah. I will abide by this pledge that I've signed, that I will immediately step down. And if I feel that I should have, you know, some recourse to defend myself, then I will submit, or I will go to a common law grand jury and let them decide whether, you know, I did violate my oath in accordance with the petition. Because technically, it needs to be, you know, it's not an accusation. You need to provide a well-articulated argument of how somebody has violated their oath. You just can't point the finger. You violated your oath, and because I'm accusing you, you got to step down. So in other words, it has to be well-articulated, and it has to be something that everybody looks at and goes, oh, yeah, that's a violation. Yep, you voted for that digital currency, and you should not have done that, so you got to step down. And that way, but here's the more important thing. Starting down this path, we want to be very careful of having a scorched earth attitude.
Right.
And so what we want to do is we want to have a little bit of empathy and understanding, because if the person really didn't know and they failed to ask, then, you know, we should probably say, well, I'm going to have a little less empathy for you. But if you did ask, like you're going to vote on something and you asked, hey, is this constitutional? Can we do this? And everybody else told you yes, then we should be a little more understanding, because you were at least challenging what you were doing.
Right.
And you deserve credit for that. But even though what you did and you were lied to and they said, yeah, this is constitutional, this is what we always do, and this is what we do, and sign this bill or vote for it. Anyway, so my point is that I'm hoping, and I know you're committed to doing this, but I'd like to actually help people understand that when buying your music, and your music is available before they even hear it, it's available on Amazon, I think, right?
Yeah, so all the major.
Okay. There you go. And so... Do you have a website for this, or do you have a link that I can put on my website? You may have already given it to me, and I've just been, you know, too busy to keep track. I can barely remember to breathe sometimes. So,
I don't because my focus has become much more about reclaiming our republic lately.
Sure,
I kind of let the website go, but let me just.
Go ahead and plug it right now, just to let everybody know what your website is.
Well, I do not have. I mean, we have the Orange Strong website, which I.
Okay, that's fine. So, but in Amazon, the artist name is Chip Murray, or is it a band?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Look for Chip Murray. Just, you know, going to Amazon and so forth. But what I want to do is I'll actually try to find it on Amazon and just provide the links for people. Now, I do not, if Amazon's the only place you can buy it, folks, then get it from Amazon.
Also Apple Music.
Apple, but I would rather them buy it directly from you. Because Amazon takes a real heavy, more than a pound of flesh. They take, you know, a good percentage of your flesh, and not just a pound.
Yeah.
And so I would much rather, you know, you'd finally develop, because once you do, I'll let everybody know, hey, you can buy directly from Chip's store or what have you. But that way you're making a larger percentage of proceeds, because the point is, because I know you're going to use these proceeds not to buy yourself a Jaguar and, you know, to live like a rock star. You want to use this money for supporting the cause, supporting liberties.
And yeah, the other place, GR, would be cdbaby.com/cd/Chip Murray.
Okay. I'll put those, we'll get together later and I'll get those up on my website. That way people can go there, because I do have a page that actually has, you know, my affiliations with like with National Liberty Alliance, We the People Foundation, and so forth. So we'll put it there. Okay, so now let's talk about the music. Now, the first album you sent to me was Wide Awake. And out of that, I found out of this, you know, almost every song I liked. As a matter of fact, you know, the music is very pleasing. And actually, there's some things I really like because it's almost like a grungy folks music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Has anybody ever said that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So a couple of them I really liked, The Ballad of John Hall, Independence Day, and What About Freedom? And What About Freedom was kind of, so folks, I usually don't do this, but I want to play these segments so long enough to get a good sample of, you know, the quality of the music that he's producing here, because it's worth your, you know, it's worth your money to buy. And as a matter of fact, I don't think your, you know, CDs today are really a wash, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, how much do these sell for? How much do your CDs sell for on Amazon?
$8.
$8, folks. I mean, you get the big bands, you're paying $13 to $20.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So let me just start off with What About Freedom, and let me just go ahead and play this. So let's take a quick pause so we can listen to What About Freedom, and this is off of Wide Awake. Okay, so we got it to the chorus and just through that. That's a very beautiful song. And so more than anything else, I think this is awesome. I mean, if folks are looking for music that helps their children, and this is modern music. I love classical music. I love jazz. I love all kinds of music. But if we're looking to play uplifting music, not just Christian music, but patriotic music, I mean, there's country used to be the place, right, where you really heard. And I know I may lose a few listeners over saying this, but when I grew up, I just didn't like country music. Now, let me defend myself by saying this, that country music was not about audio quality and the engineering and all of that. It was literally about the message. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've ever listened to country music, most all of country music was mono. They didn't do it in stereo. And so when you listen to it, because I loved playing music, I was a musician, and I liked listening to it. And in stereo, you recreate the performance. In other words, if you've got a really good engineer, he will place the instruments on a soundstage for you that, you know, the singer's right in front and the drummer's over to the right or the left, and the bass guitar kind of segregated along that stage to where... Not in mono, everything comes from the center. It's a very collapsed. It's, to me, when I listen to mono, it's like I'm in the very back of the stadium where everything is coming from a central point. And with stereo, you literally get the extreme lefts and rights. And in the 60s and 70s, stereo was so entertaining because they did literally that. I mean, they went to the extremes with, you know, like Pink Floyd and some of the different bands that. And the Beatles. The Beatles were one of the real ushers in utilizing stereo in popular music. See, most popular music was most of it was done in mono because it was just about the song and singing along. The only place where they were doing high quality recordings was in classical and in jazz. And if you didn't know, the standards were actually set like in the 50s by RCA when they were recording classical music. There was this little logo that they had with the dog looking at the Victrola. And so if you've ever listened to Living Stereo was the little label they had on their albums of the classical music. When you look at that, the album itself on the center was a shaded dog. And that shaded dog meant that that album was produced in a very high fidelity stereophonic recording, which means that the highest standards were being applied. And it was unfortunate that in popular music, the industry was more interested in just cranking out hits instead of cranking out music. Well, that started shifting in the later 60s. And the Beatles started that. So anyway, a little history lesson, I guess. But my point was that I just didn't like listening to mono music and most of the pop music that was done in mono. And so I just go,
that's changed in terms of country catching up with, quality engineering.
And it took a while, though. So by the time I was out of high school and all of that, I had already created my biases in the 70s that, country music is stuck in this rut like pop music used to be. It was just mono and it was just about, the twang and a message and so forth, and in some other ways, I think my country music friends always boiled it down. It was either about a train, a dog, or some woman leaving you.
Well, I lived in Texas in the mid 70s and kind of got an ear for Willie Nelson down there.
Yes, and I had lots of friends that loved old Willie, and what a rebel he was. So, okay. So anyway, back to this song though. What about freedom and the context behind this? Was there anything that drove, why you needed to express this? Go ahead.
I think there's probably nobody listening to this right now, GR, that can't relate to what happened to us. After the great divider, the fundamental transformer came into town, right, and started dividing us. And so just, what I tried to convey in that song was how it felt to be, all of a sudden, once we used to be friends and now because of, I like this person versus that person, or I see the this color versus that color, whatever, all of a sudden we're being divided down every kind of line, ideological and what have you.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Star Trek? Did you watch Star Trek when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember the black and white twins?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay, so there were these aliens that were black and white. In other words, this guy was black on the left side of his face and body, and he was white on the other side. And this twin, this person looked just like him, who was a different person, was a different faction, because he was black on the right side and white on the left side. So they were opposites. And right. they were mortal enemies because of that. And so a friend of mine, you know, made a very astute stating the obvious. I mean, wisdom is literally stating the obvious. And he made a very wise comment. He goes, it doesn't matter what the issue is. We can always find ways to divide ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I know since you're very attuned to Christianity, the scriptures, and so forth. In Matthew 24, when the apostles were asking Christ, what would it be like, you know, prior to his coming again? And he kind of describes that in Matthew 24. And a part of that, he basically says, everybody will be offended. There's a little line where he just says this, and he's basically creating this context to how divided we are over these little things that we allow ourselves to be offended because, you know, it, you know, that comment was, you know, misogynist or misandrist or what have you, right? We become so hardwired and so wound tight over our little pet peeves that, we, you know, we can't work. We can't even exist with these other people. I mean, it is just, this is the state of our world. We are so divided, we just have this scorched earth attitude.
Well, and since we, you know, when you think about it, our problems really started to multiply after we voted God out of our schools and Fair out of the schools, and it was all downhill from there, right? The JFK assassination, the onto Roe v. Wade, just been a backslide from that point.
Yeah, when we turned our backs, you know, basically what happens when you remove the morals, the mores, so, you know, there's a direct tie to morals and mores. What are mores? Mores is the societal morals. In other words, how we treat each other. You know, this is, you know, again, these are the finer things of a society, again, how, you know, we're respectful and those types of things. When you remove the morals, the mores will just go down the toilet.
Yeah.
And so yeah. This is, you know, this is the problem that we have to solve. But the question is, how do we solve that? And that's for a different show, because your music in some ways actually, I think, addresses these problems. They may not actually, and that whole point of music is to, you know, to create this, I'll just say, project this metaphor to help place context to some of these different problems. Like you basically said, the Ballad of John Hall, which is actually on this. And actually, this is the first song on the album, and I'm going to go ahead and play this if you don't mind. So,
please.
Folks, this is the Ballad of John Hall.
How will the barren banker boys build the prison of success? And traded in their country for the hell of emptiness. I heard them on the radio, I saw them on TV, while John Hall looked the other way. They stole from you and me. I could not yell, I could not cry. I held you in my arms, closed my eyes, and felt my country dying. They put a torch to the promise every father made his son. The first time in our history the dream had been undone. We fight with one another and we've lost the will to see, while John Hall looked the stole our liberty. I never thought I'd see the day when freedom hangs her head. I wipe my tears and watch my country die.
Okay, so this is a pretty pointed song, and you wrote this about somebody that was actually running for office, as I think you described this.
Yeah. John Hall was a congressman, and this was right around the time it was, right after 2008, it was after 2008, the housing collapse, the subprimes and all that.
Okay, yeah.
And I got to tell you, I played this at a campaign stop for Nan, who was running against John Hall. We played this, we performed this live, and it was the most incredible thing. I had a man come up to me in tears because at the end of the song it describes, the family on the hill that had to sell everything because they couldn't pay their bills, and the child was looking up to the father with tears in their eyes. Why? And this guy came up and he says, you just sang my story.
Yeah.
And so much of it that, anyway, that's where that came from.
Yeah. So actually there's other tales that went very similar. I mean, when we look at what the federal government did by creating subsidies for farmers and how the farmers just took the money and they, started enjoying life, getting good money for not doing anything, and their farm equipment suffered. they lost their labor because they laid their labor off. They didn't need people because they weren't doing farming this year. Another year we're not going to do farming. Well, you do that for enough years for you to kickstart and get back into farming. It's a big investment then, and it becomes very hard. And so. That was economic warfare that the federal government was waging against the states, because as the farmers were making money, many states didn't have income tax, and they based their revenue off of what the businesses, farmers, put into the market and so forth. They taxed the production of stuff. So if all of a sudden the state's not producing hardly anything, states like Iowa and, corn states and agricultural states, they really suffered because the federal government undermined them.
Right.
So these stories, when government is doing things that harm us and hurt us like this, this is just, to me, it places context to the harm that when government has those types of powers, they can do things. They will hurt you. So you had another album, and as a matter of fact, I'm looking at one of the songs that, let me see here. What album was Angels from the Dark on? Because that was another one that kind of jumped out.
Angels from Demons. Angels from Devils.
Angels from Devils. I'm sorry. Angels, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. That was the most recent.
That's your most recent one. Okay.
When the world turned.
Let me play this, and then you can give us some context after we listen to a little bit of this, because
okay.
Love these songs.
Gone with the wind. Never thought I'd see you again. Old friends never die, just like the age old question why. Glad you let me love you before you let me go. Can't stay here forever, gone with the wind. Lost on the wind. Truth of victory over sin. Man's purpose in this life. Fear the pain and honest strife. Redemption is a knowing the truth will set you free. Leave here as we came, gone with the wind.
You know, usually I would get in trouble when I play this much of a song, you know, because there's copyrights involved. But when you have the artist right here with you, you can kind of get away with this. So it just seems like all of your albums, the entirety of them, are of the quality and precisely what I think America needs. And so, I mean, these are great sounding songs. The stereo, as a matter of fact, that particular song, the interplay with the offbeats from the percussions is unlike your others. And so it kind of has, to me, it's a little catchy because I like that. But the percussionists would like the offbeats, right?
That's right.
But sure. My point is that if people today need to be entertained, which I think this is an indictment, because in the old days, as a matter of fact, one of the things I learned in history was that George Washington loved the plays and going to the theater. When we said the theater, it wasn't movie films. It were the plays and musicals. Right. It was how they received entertainment. Now, in America at that time, the only people that had entertainment like that were the affluent. You know, typically the entertainment, you know, throughout America, the average American had to entertain themselves. They didn't have a radio. They didn't have, you know, any refinements, you know, just out their door. I mean, they were very disconnected. So the families that could get instruments and, you know, that and have their children learn how to play. You know, there's some kids that are just like prodigies. They can pick up a guitar and start playing or piano or what have you. But back in those days, those instruments weren't cheap.
Right.
And
well,
go ahead.
Interesting. My music of choice nowadays is bluegrass.
Ah.
And when you think of the history of that and,
right,
you know, the areas of the country where mm-hmm. pretty much people just sat around with very organic, you know, all wind, banjo, fiddle, just washboards, mm-hmm. whatever they could find to make music with. And there's what I love about it nowadays is because you know as well as anybody, GR, that the enemy, at some point they lowered the frequency, right,
mm-hmm.
of music, but that the higher the frequency, the more up the frequency, it spiritually, it brings us to a better place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. I every time I'm driving and I'm listening to Bluegrass Junction, I can't help but be in an upbeat, smiling mood, you know?
Right. And actually, so when we look at how America participated in music, it was usually only done once a week. When people participated in music or, you know, actually enjoyed music was when they went to church. And, you know, every church tried to create choirs and so forth. Because technically, choir music, they may have had a piano, they may have had, if the church had the money to have a piano or an organ. Sometimes it was a cappella. In other words, and this is why when you really look at hymns and how they created the orchestration of the different voices from tenor, bass, soprano, and so forth, that was, you know, this interplay of harmonics, right? And people, their introduction and their only exposure to music in the early days, if you lived in rural America, that was it. I mean, you know, people would hear of stories that they would have, you know, theaters where these talented musicians would come and do, but those were just stories.
Yeah.
You couldn't just get in the car and drive across the country to attend a concert. I mean, people were, they were, I don't want to say they were stuck. They were blessed to have what they had. And that's how they looked at life. Anyway, it's amazing how we've evolved, because today I would even think that music has become an addiction to some people.
Oh, yeah. You ever been to Ireland, GR?
Where?
Ireland.
Ireland, no. Never been to Ireland, no.
Well, my first trip there was in 84, but what blew me away was just that they sang everywhere. They sing in the car. You couldn't go to a pub and not have people just spontaneously show up with all kinds of, you know, different instruments and just start playing and singing.
And that's because for centuries they were a close-knit community.
Yeah.
And America was a very vast rural area where we weren't that close-knit.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting, the contrast. I mean, there were places that did have communities, like in the South and in the North on the eastern side. But the more you went west, the more divided you got. And one of the things that became a reality is those people who went west, they were more apprehensive in trusting people than those people who stayed east, because you lived in this community, you knew everybody, and so it was far more trustful. I mean, going west, you were going to be a newbie for everybody else, and everybody else was new for you, and getting to know each other, because you were so far apart from each other, it took a long time to develop that trust and that relationship and creating even a community. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so the evolution of the West, and actually, if you really look at the hinterland, or I should say the center of America, the heartland of America, it was never... There were areas like Des Moines and, you know, and Denver and those types of places. You know what I tell people about Denver? Is all these people were going west to get to the gold in California and get, you know, to the great adventures on the West Coast, when they were coming across the plains and they went, you know, hundreds of miles across those plains, and, you know, wear and tear on those rickety carts and everything else, you know, had this play in the, all of this. But Denver exists because of all the quitters when they saw the Rocky Mountains.
Never thought of that.
Denver is a town of quitters, because when they got to Denver and they saw the magnitude of those mountains they had to cross, they said, you know what, I'm going to just stay here.
Well, of course, before John Denver got there and ruined it, it was a pretty beautiful place in its own right.
Yes, yes. Well, and so anyway, I need to wrap this up, but I've got to, you know, we've got to bring you back, and I want to be able to expose some more music, because what I'd like to do is I'd like to give you a problem that you can't keep up production, because this is great music, you know, and I know you're a humble person. I'm equally humble, but folks, you're not going wrong when you're buying these albums, these CDs. You've got three of them. So folks, I would just recommend going and buying all of them. Because it's not like they're the best of or anything like that, where they can capture a little more money. Chip is giving you an honest product for an honest dollar, and it's an uplifting product, and it's something that you can actually play in the car and let your kids, because your kids actually listen to the words. Believe it or not, you know, this is the subliminal messaging that actually helps. And if you're not listening to the words that your kids are hearing in the music they're listening to, you'd actually be shocked. So,
because
I remember when I was growing up, the words meant everything. I remember reading the lyrics on the album covers and so forth. And so kids do that today. Oh, what are the lyrics? I need to know exactly what they're saying. And so I don't know if you actually have your lyrics out there, but you may want to, so that the kids and the parents can see it and go, you know, wow, these are great messages. And so I really appreciate the fact that you created these. I want to help, you know, stimulate people in buying Chip Murray's music. And so what we want to do is put this out online, because if we can help elevate your sales and everything else, I honestly think, because I know there's going to be contributions towards the patriotic cause, folks, when we actually support the Patriots, we're helping them support us as well. And I'll just leave it with that. Any other comments or parting shots?
Yeah, GR, just want to thank you for your friendship, and you know, getting to know you was one of the highlights of an otherwise crazy year, 2024.
Well, the feeling's mutual, absolutely mutual.
It's been a joy, my brother.
Equally.
And I appreciate your, you know, your graciousness of having me on the show today.
No problem. As a matter of fact, we'll have you back, and we'll try to actually make a commitment to bringing you back at least a few times this year. And who knows, sooner better than later, I think, because I think helping people receive, you know, opportunities to enrich their lives or make, you know, their family enriched or help enrich their family. I think these music is a great way of doing that. It literally is. So anyway, thank you so much for joining. And folks, when we come back, we're going to go straight into a break and come right back. And so I'll basically end the bookmark, so like I usually do with long interviews like this. But God bless you, Chip, and we will have you back sometime soon.
Thank you, GR. God bless you, brother.
Thank you so much. Well, from there, we've got about 3 minutes left to end the show. And so what we want to do is kind of cover what we're going to be covering in the next couple of days. We'll have Tammy back tomorrow, and tomorrow we're going to be actually taking on the Articles of Association, because technically we should have covered those first before the Tory Acts. The fact is that the Tory Acts started on January, so a lot of times I'll try to actually do the show or the content that's appropriate for the time. And instead of just kind of fitting it all in schedule-wise, because it's nice to be able to do the Declaration of Independence, the Tory Acts, when, you know, on those very specific dates. So that's what we're going to be doing next, is the Articles of Association. We're going to do the Articles of Confederation, and drum roll, folks. After we hit the Articles of Confederation, we're going to dive into the Organic Act. Now, this is where the government basically decided to give itself full latitude to go and create corporations and literally dive away from the Constitution. Now, this wasn't necessarily the beginning of the warfare on the states and everything else. This was really an effort and a move to try to protect the United States from another war. And so there were a lot of people that just basically caved in and did Britain's evil doings. But bottom line, folks, as we start looking at this, this is the beginning of how they basically went sideways. The fact is, it doesn't really jump necessarily out until you look at that treaty of what they were doing and how they were going to go down that path. They didn't want to necessarily play all of their cards right out in front of everybody. So what we're going to be doing along with the Organic Act and this treaty is trying to look at how this literally started opening up this sideways movement where they literally started going down this path of embracing godlessness and everything else. It all began in 1771 or 1871 after the election of 1870. So we'll set the stage for you as we dive into this. But bottom line, we're here to kind of hold your hand and walk down this path as we watch what ends up happening to America as it decides to do things that they had no authority to do. In other words, they started assuming powers and such that they had no power to do. With that, just laying it out there, folks, we'll be diving into this after the Articles of Association and Confederation. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.